Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey everyone, Jeremy Scheinwald here with another episode of Smart People Should Build Things, the Venture for America podcast. Our podcast is produced by, yeah, it's true, Venture for America, a fellowship program for enterprising recent college graduates who launch their careers as entrepreneurs and thus help revitalize American cities. After 5 weeks of training, VFA fellows spend 2 years in the trenches of a startup in an emerging U.S. city where they learn how to contribute to a high-growth business. Afterwards, VFA provides the mentorship, network, and resources fellows need to become entrepreneurs. VFA has had some notable successes, like Mike Wilner, who launched Compass, which creates easy-to-build professional websites without the headaches. To learn more about Venture for America and our fellow success stories, or to support our work, you can visit ventureforamerica.org. I've been involved with VFA since even before its inception. I worked across the office from VFA founder Andrew Yang, and when he told me about VFA, I jumped on board immediately. I lament often, if only VFA had been around when I graduated. Instead of VFA, I launched the Mission Driven Group. Check out our firm at missiondrivengroup.com. And please remember to like this show on iTunes. If you're listening regularly, like the show already. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jeremy Scheinwald. And you should be subscribing to the show as well. If you're listening to this for the first time, make sure to subscribe. Going back to my Twitter, I am not a big tweeter. I'm going for low volume and high quality, which I think is the opposite of how Twitter works. So you can join me and hopefully get some high quality tweets. Today on the show, we have B. Arthur of In Your Corner, soon to be Inside the Wire. You'll hear about that on the show. B is a two-time, I guess maybe three-time entrepreneur. Again, you'll hear about it on the show. She's a one-time guest on Shark Tank. Fascinating story. She has two master's degrees from Columbia, one in counseling and one in clinical psychology. She initially started Me Time, which was a short-lived place for moms to drop their kids and have mom dates. When MeTime fell victim to the Great Recession, B was undeterred. She came back and started Pretty Padded Room, which became, after rebranding, became In Your Corner, which provided online therapy and coaching, quote, on your own time and in your own space. And with In Your Corner wrapping, she is now pivoting towards Inside the Wire, which will be providing, which will be a provider of counseling and coaching solutions for military veterans. And again, you'll hear more about that in a moment. But in addition to Inside the Wire, B has launched a web-based show called You're Not Crazy, and where she counsels comedians and helps them understand their own personal coaching and therapy issues. She's a jack of many trades. Why don't we learn more about B instead of me telling you all about it? We're so thrilled to have B. Arthur on today's podcast. But before we do that, I am curious if you are an entrepreneur in need of a new or upgraded website. Wix.com has just what you need. Go to Wix.com and sign up for an entirely free account today. You can create your own stunning live website in no time at all. No matter what sector you're in, Wix.com has something for you. With hundreds of designer-made, customizable templates to choose from, including a drag-and-drop editor, there's no coding needed. Don't be daunted. You don't need to be a programmer or designer to create something beautiful. You can do it yourself with Wix.com. Millions of entrepreneurs create their own professional websites using Wix.com, and the results are stunning. Wix, it's easy and free. Go to Wix.com today. Did I say to go to Wix.com today? I'm pretty sure I did. Go to Wix.com today. Go to Wix.com today. There you go. On to the show with B. Arthur.
Welcome to Smart People Should Build Things, the Venture for America podcast.
Building things can be really hard, and entrepreneurship is often portrayed in the media as the sexy or even worse, easy career path. Through this series, we plan to pull back the curtain and tell the gritty stories of entrepreneurship. We're striving to create a relaxed environment where entrepreneurs feel free to tell their stories.
This is Smart People Should Build Things, the Venture for America podcast.
So B, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited.
And thanks so much for being a great supporter of Venture for America.
I love Venture for America. I have to say, I want to shout out the Ash and Anvil team. I was asked to help and come mentor for some of the Detroit companies, and I just love the grit and, you know, just like total no access at all sometimes. Apparently in Michigan, they don't even have water. So forget access to like startup capital and all that stuff. I just love the grit. I love the drive. I love the hustle. Really smart, really hungry. So I really enjoyed working with them.
We got to have the Ash and Anvil team
on
the show.
You really should. They're popping. You really should.
Next time they're in NYC, or I'm always happy to make a trip out to Detroit. I should go out
there.
Are you though? I really am. I've been looking for a reason to go for a long time.
Okay.
So,
it's cool. It's
now you're challenging me, so now I have to go.
It's a challenge. The gauntlet is thrown.
All right. So let's talk about let's talk about you. That's why you're here. So I'm curious about your background, because your family immigrated to the States from Ghana.
Yes.
You're the first, I believe, in your family born in the States.
Yes.
And like the immigrant experience can I think cut both ways. You know, I'm in theory an immigrant to the United States myself from Canada, but we sort of, you know, we get in here pretty seamlessly.
Yeah,
and it's not that challenging. But I love the you know the immigrant story, and I'm curious whether like I feel like the immigrant story is one that I think it cuts in one of two ways. Either parents are like, I sacrificed so much and I got you to where you are. Now just be a conservative professional and make a good living. Yeah. Or I sacrificed so much, so just go out and live the life of your dreams.
Mm.
I'm curious if one of those two...
Whose parents said that?
So neither of those. So the first one resonates with you.
The first one is my life, yeah. My parents are from Ghana. Both are from Ghana and West Africa. And my parents came to Houston, Texas, where Beyonce is also from, in the 80s. And that's where I was born and created. And Ghanaian parents, African parents in general, I think all immigrant children have this experience of, I came here. You know, I didn't leave my family and travel and all these things just to, you know, have you want to be a rapper, you know. But I can't rap anyway, so that was all right. But my parents are very focused on education. My parents are very spiritual. You know, we were raised Methodist. My parents are very hardworking. When people always ask, you know, how did you become an entrepreneur? Almost everybody in my family has started a company because there's just a, like, this isn't working. My mother was a hotel security, a hotel security person for years before she just started personal care homes in Houston, and now we have 12. Including day treatment center.
Wow, I want to have your mom on the show.
Yeah, she's no joke. She'll cook for you. She'll kill a goat for you and everything. You really should have her on here.
Tell me when she's in town. I'm serious. We want a real interesting array of stories. That
she
sounds like a fascinating
love
story.
That. Yeah, she's actually really funny too. She's really adorable. You'd love her. And then my dad had to get his PhD twice. You know, that was before they had EEOD. So when he came to Texas in the 80s, they told him, well, you're qualified. He has a PhD in public health from the Baylor College of Medicine. And they were just like, well, you're qualified, but you're black and you have an accent. And you could say that in interviews back then. So my parents, and that was their first experience with...
What year is this?
This is like, when was I born? I was born in 1983. So yeah, in the 80s, mid-80s.
That's insane.
But they were just kind of like, okay, we're here to work, you know? And because it was interesting, in Ghana, like if you worked and something didn't work out for you, it wasn't because you were black, you know? Like, because everybody's black. So it's good in the way that we never had this like resentment or this felt like outsiders or anything because like things weren't happening before it was black. It was like, well, you want something, somebody's not giving it to you, find a way, you know? And so that was kind of how we were raised growing up, find a way. There was no room for complaining.
I'm not joking. I want your mom on the show.
I would love that. Oh my God.
There's my Canadian accent. I want your mom on the show. I want your mom on the show. So you had this like really atypical route to entrepreneurship. I guess maybe you said your dad did public health, was a PhD in public
health? Yeah, he was the director of immunizations for the City of Houston Health Department.
Okay, so.
So he hates all this hippie nonsense.
Yeah, me too. I am
He's
very,
like, y'all don't
very
want
pro
medicine?
Vaccination.
He came from Africa to run the immunization. He's like, y'all don't want medicine. All you don't want modern medicine.
He's on the show too. I want to talk about pro-vaccination with him. You started your career, you earned two master's degrees, staff therapist at the New York Psychotherapy and Counseling Center. Like, when you started there, was there any thought towards entrepreneurship? Did you have this in your bones? You're like, no, I'm gonna be part of the system, and it's meaningful to me, and that's it.
It's really, you know, I have to say, I think most entrepreneurs I know kind of were lost for a while because when I first came to New York, and I only came to New York because I got kicked out of London because I wanted to stay there and I couldn't get a visa. I was there for my last semester of college, and when I came to New York, I wanted to do nonprofit. I quickly realized you can only be super rich if you want to do nonprofit. And then I got into real estate. estate. I worked for Bloomberg. I was a personal trainer for a bit. You know, I never lasted longer than 3 months doing anything. And when I was in real estate, I was doing really well. And the reason I did really well is because I was super nosy. And I was just like, you know, especially in new development, you can just like sell a dream. You know, you're like, do you want to live with him? Do you think y'all are going to have kids together? and I was just really good at getting people to open up. And finally, one of my clients was like, you should be a therapist. And I had never thought of it. And I literally only applied to Columbia. I shadowed a class with my friend, and that was that. It was me. Like, I love counseling. I love psych. It helped my own personal identity and growth and understanding things and people better, and sales as well. So that became my passion. When I graduated, I went straight to New York Psychotherapy, and that was in the hood. So that was a mental health agency. You know, we were all talked about like the here and now and mindfulness. That's what they teach you at Columbia. And in the hood, they're just thinking about eating. You know, like, why are there 8 people on this bed? You know, just survival. And it's a really different challenge. They kind of throw you to the wolves. So that was my very first job. And then after that, I just really became passionate about getting as many people the kind of supportive services and not having to struggle alone as possible. And that's kind of how the seed was planted for the company.
And yet, I mean, so we'll certainly get to In Your Corner. But I mean, you started another venture like during this time, Me Time.
Yes.
And, you know, and it was kind of like a place for moms to drop their kids and do mom dates, I think.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I love that. You know, I can't believe that's on the internet.
No, you can find anything. If you spend enough time, you go to like the 10th page of Google, you can find anything about anyone. So, you know, it was kind of short-lived, and
really
short. you opened it kind of just as the recession really
right.
went full on.
Mm-hmm.
But was it just timing? Like, could that idea have worked? Is it still in the back of your head? Like, I want another shot at that one.
Not necessarily, because you really have to trust the process. So the reason I even came up with Me Time, which was basically I just wanted to have a brownstone on the Upper East Side. We had on-site childcare and just grown-up playdates for moms to hang out. And I came up with the idea because I babysat all through grad school, and I was young and cool. And so when the moms would come back, and these were like really high-powered women who, like, before they had kids were like bosses, and now they stayed home all day with kids who just like couldn't even talk, you know. So they would always like be like, do you want to hang out? Or, you know, they'd pay me to hang out with them. And I was like, wow, you really miss having grown-up company, don't you? And I just got really into the idea that like everything towards moms, even young moms, was just about being a mom. But you were a woman before you were a mom, and that's certainly the kind of mom I'm gonna be. Like, I have no interest in being a stay-at-home mom. Like, if mom ain't happy, ain't nobody gonna be happy. I'm still gonna dress like this, you know. I'm gonna drink champagne while I'm pregnant, you know, because I want my kids to be cool. So with Me Time, I think when I started, it was a good idea, but all the people that I had a small angel investor. All the people I was targeting were the wives of all the men who had just been laid off in the financial crash. So it was literally, it just wasn't going to work out. But it was fast and furious. It was like 2 months max, and maybe like 3 months. But as a result, I got super depressed because I hadn't told anybody about it. It was like what I had done my thesis on, actually, when I was at Columbia. And I just felt like, wow, like if I'm this depressed and all my best friends are therapists and I have access to some of the best therapists in New York, and it's this hard for me to make a move to find the right therapist, it must be that much harder for the average person. So I just really, I remembered an article I read about this place in Japan where you could go in and just buy cups and plates and bowls and just break them. And then pay for them and leave. And that's exactly what I wanted. I wanted to rage. I just wanted to bang on my keyboard, have somebody write back and be like, that sounds normal. You're not crazy. And then I'd feel better. Get it out of my system and get on with my life. You know, I didn't want to make an appointment. I didn't want to talk about my dad or, you know, any of the things that even I thought that therapy represented. And so, yeah, I was just like, let's just make it easier. And so that's how I started Pretty Padded Room, a nice place to go crazy.
I want to go to Japan and go to that. I had no idea that existed.
I hope that's
I'm ready
around.
To go. I don't have that much anger in me, but I think it would just still be fun to break things.
Really feel like yes, everyone should do it.
So you mentioned you had an investor at Me Time, and I read somewhere that he or she wanted you to delay your launch.
Yeah.
But you forged ahead anyway. Was there like,
they were right? It was one woman who believed me. It wasn't a lot. It was like 10 grand or something. It all it did was get the website up. She was
right.
Just like, well, it's clearly a bad time, you know, because
right.
She was in that market. You know, it was her and her husband's money. And she was like, yeah, nobody I know, everybody's not spending. Nobody knows what's going to happen. It seems like it's going to last a while. And she was like, I think you should wait. And I was like, no, you know, I'm going to work hard and this and that. And, you know, some things, there's external factors, and timing was huge. Also, now that I'm older and I have friends who have kids, I wasn't a mom at the time. I was kind of a solution without a problem. Like, the truth is, if you were a mom and you had a free hour to yourself, you're not going to go across town to hang out with strangers. You're going to take a nap or do your laundry or something, you know? So it probably wouldn't have worked out in the long run anyway. And there's other people. It's a very saturated market. So it worked out. But I learned a good lesson.
So you took some knocks. You know, I read somewhere you're sort of like, desperately trying to make it a success, and I can see from your body language that you're really into it. I mean, was it, you know, like, were you sure at that point that you were going to try again? Like, were you sure that, were you like, look, it was tough, but yeah, I have the entrepreneurial bug. I want to be my own person. Or were you like, wow, I just need a break from this and just need to get my thoughts together?
That's a good question. It was really interesting because I, like, you know, when you're working out and or you injure yourself, if you like move the wrong way, like you're like, oh, don't do that. Like, it was my heart. It sounds super gay. It sounds super emotional, but my heart had muscle memory. Like, I remembered what it felt like to fail. I remember what it was like to, you know, ask my parents to borrow money. I remember, you know, it was my first time out, you know, out of grad school. And I felt really down. And I was kind of like, I don't know if I want to do this. I don't know if I want to do this. And I just talked to everybody I could. That's my best advice. And people always say, keep it to yourself. Why? Like, what are you going to do with it by yourself, especially if you don't know what you don't know? And I talked to everybody about it. People thought Pretty Pattern Room was a good idea. And I sat on it for a month. It was still on my mind. And I just needed to see it. It was like my kid. I was like, I just needed to see if it would work because I loved it. I just loved the idea. And so I gave myself a month. And I said, if you're still thinking about it, you should do it. And so I did it.
So I'm always curious about, like, that point that, like, pushes you over. You're like, God, I've got to do this. I mean, did you write it down, like, pros and cons? Was it an emotional decision? Was it did you model it out? Like, how did you ultimately
make the choice? I wish I was a better planner. I, like, do first and think later. I've always been just the good thing about having immigrant parents is there was no, you know, go to the business and get a bank loan. There is no, we're gonna, you know, do an executive summary, nothing like that. Like, you get some money together and, you know, you hustle really, really hard at it until it, like, gets enough attention to get you more money. And you just make it the old fashioned way, through customers. So for me, I really just went to therapists first. I went to people who I thought would use it. I started, you know, I'm really good at getting press. I just like talking about things that I think other people might like. And it was the moment that I woke up and I was kind of like, are you sure you want to do this? Like, what if it's embarrassing and people might not like it? And I just really needed to see it. I just really wanted to meet it. And that's what it felt like. So I just kept talking about it and I kept getting connected with people who would get me closer and closer to building it and things like that and wireframing. And that's how it started.
So I'm going to read you this quote here.
This is my own quote?
Yes, this is from you. He said,
I do not recall.
I'd say to entrepreneurs, don't make any rash decisions. When you're in a desperate state of mind is when you make careless decisions that you can't take back. As cool as that Jerry Maguire moment was, like, I'm out or whatever. I quit my job a little bit too soon.
Oh, man.
And it was very stressful. Then you throw money at the problem and then you're broke. If it's the right decision, it's worth it to take the time to do it right.
Yeah.
Know the differences between impulses and instincts. I think I might have actually just boxed you in here and said, like, which way, how impulsive was the
decision?
Like, that lady
is brilliant.
So what should you have done? Like, should you have been staying in a job longer and just building slowly?
Yeah, well, you end up building slowly anyway. You know, like, even if you have, like, backing
point
and a team, you know, it's always starting slow. And, you know, you're more likely to run out of steam and run out of money if you don't have a true plan. So, yeah, definitely what happened to me. At the time, I was a domestic violence counselor, which is actually why I wanted Pretty Padded Room to be primarily female. I loved an all-female team. Our clients were mostly women. And I loved that job. The thing that people don't know about therapists, it's kind of like, you know, in romantic comedies, like, therapists and architects, they always love going to that job. But we don't get paid a lot of money, you know. Like, I have two masters from Columbia. All of the women I worked with had spoke at least two or three languages, and we all got paid $38,000. And it was like, this is not emotionally or financially sustainable. I love therapy. I love my clients. But, like, if I got paid a little bit more, I probably would have stayed at that job forever. I loved DV because they're not, like, truly crazy or unstable. They just, like, needs, like, you see change very quickly, which is very rewarding for a goal-oriented therapist. Anyway, I launched while I was with FEGS at the Center for Women and Families, and we started to get more press, like just like more and more, and I was getting asked to talk about it more, and I was like, oh, this thing is going to be a runaway hit. I'm just going to go for it. And I remember I left, like I had 3 months left to get all my licensing hours. I was like, no, I'm a star. I'm too big for you people. I like made my clients throw me a party and cook chicken. It was like a mess. I was like, bye, you guys. I'll see you on the other side. And literally the first 2 years were a wash. I mean, I remember like having my birthday 4 days, like 4 months later, and I was like, oh my God, why didn't I just stay? You know, like nothing happened. We went into summer. It was a lull. And yeah, then I went back to waiting tables. So the first 2 years are pretty bad. I think the first year we made $7,500. The second year we made $20,000, and then I went on Shark Tank.
Okay, so that's my next
I know how to do a segue, Jeremy.
Yeah. Why don't you just, I'll walk the door. You finish the interview. So Shark Tank. Yeah. So tell us about the decision to go on Shark Tank. And I mean, it seems like it was a tough experience. Like, are you busy, tweeting the sharks on a regular basis?
And
like,
why
hey, this
I do
thing
that?
Took off. Like, you
they
guys.
They see me. They know who I am.
No. Beat me up a little bit, and I'm ready to show you that I succeeded. I don't need you, sharks.
Nobody needs the shark. You know, most of those deals are handshake deals. At the time, though, you know, it is primarily for entertainment and educational purposes. It's on Friday night. Dads and families like to watch it with their kids. You know, there's quick math. You get to, encourage the entrepreneurial spirit. It's a hit for those reasons. I literally was going into it as just kind of like, I'm waiting tables and trying to make this company work. This is what I know about investors. And also when I saw it, they had never asked real like startup questions. And also when I started my company, I thought I was running a counseling company. I didn't think I was running a tech platform. Surprise, surprise, that it's a different language, And I think I was running a business, and I ended up having to pivot to the mindset of running a startup, which those two things look very different. And it takes a very different life cycle. So when I went on the show, my producers, and that's the thing. They prepare you very, very well. You have two producers. They practice it with you. They make you do all the different edits. You discuss props. It's very detailed. So when people are like, you weren't prepared, it was like, no, and that was kind of like meant to be. It's a TV show, so they do plan for what people want. And they're like, well, but you smile too much, and you do look like that. So like, we're going to make them think you're Kelly Bundy, and then you're going to knock them out with your knowledge. I'm like, you're right, guys. Well, guess what happened? We get on there, and they really treated me like I was Kelly. I mean, it was... Nothing can prepare you for that. It was like getting jumped. It was like walking into what you think is a surprise party for your birthday, and then like everybody just jumps you and insults you and everything you love. And
yeah, there's such a power differential there, like knowledge. Knowledge differential, I guess. I mean, they know how to do this. They know how it works, and there's what, four of them? I mean, it's obviously
five of them. Five. And you stand there for like 30. And this is how I walked in. I walked in, and I was like literally like shadow boxing, like listening to Beyonce outside. Like I was pumped up. My producers were pumped up. And you walk in, and you stand on your mark, and you have to wait like 30 seconds. Like until they like get the thing, and they're used to this, but it's like weird. Like there's five people staring at you that you've seen on TV, and Barbara Corcoran. I mean, she treated me like it was Dolphin Tank. She was like, "Wow," she was like, "You are so beautiful," and she goes, "Damon, isn't she beautiful?" And he was like doing something. And he looks up and he just like shrugs, and I was like, "Oh yeah, this is how this is supposed to go. They're not meant to like me. I'm used to people liking me." And I was like, "Okay." And after that, it just started. Like, I mean, the one in the middle had such a hard on for me. He like hated me. He was like, "This is stupid. I've seen a million things like this. You should charge less. You should charge more." He talked the most. I mean, I felt bad for the other sharks because he just wouldn't let it go. And so, even I remember there was a time when I said, I was up there for like 40 minutes. They only aired like, 6-7 minutes of it. And at one point, I was just kind of like, well, I think a lot of therapists, I really care about them. I'm a therapist first, and most of us end up working for nonprofits. He's like, you are running a nonprofit. And, and I tried, and I actually was in real estate, like I said, before I went back to grad school. And I looked at Barbara. I said, Barbara, you're part of the Pretty Padded Room story. I worked for Corcoran, and that's when I learned that people liked and trusted me, and that made me go into psych. And he goes, I don't like you, and I don't trust you. And he was just like relentless. And I remember there was a time when I wanted to snap because I he had said something super disrespectful, like about my mother or something crazy like that. No, he didn't really talk about my mother, but it felt like he was being disrespectful. And I said, and I started to say something, and he goes, what? And then Mark Cuban goes, oh, wait, she's going to say something. And in that moment, it clicked. It doesn't feel like you're on TV because the cameras are kind of hidden. So in that moment, I just saw how it was going to be seen. Like, I even saw the headline. I was like, it's going to say psycho therapist, millionaire massacre. I almost lost my mind. And after that, I just kind of shut up. Everything they said to me, I was like, okay, all right, thank you, okay. And I just like made sure that I looked cute and like kept it cute. And that was it. I didn't even think it was going to air because I thought it was so boring.
But still, it still was a success for you, which I think is it's, I guess, a tribute to how big their audience is. I read that you had like 500
yeah.
potential clients or clients contact you right after, and
yep.
and then it led some growth.
So this was also another learning moment that you make a decision, because I mean, I was really brutal. I mean, if I was awake or alone after that, I was crying. I have cried on every subway in this city. You know, like I literally walked back. You go back and you do your little, you know, after postmortem thing, and they were, and I hadn't started crying by that point. Everyone's like the crew, everyone was just like, sorry. Like, I mean, it was really, really, really bad. They actually reshot some of my scenes. It was really brutal. I just started crying, and I was like, well, maybe I am terrible. Maybe. And also, they didn't really hate the business. They seemed to dislike me personally, like as James and Mary's daughter. They were just like, you are terrible. Everything about you is terrible. And so it really, you take it personally. You can't help it, you know. And I went home, and there's like a 4-month like lapse between the time they tape and the time it airs. And like I said, I just like cried and cried and cried. And by the like 6th week, I just stayed in bed. I ate wings and I watched a lot of American Dad. And at the last 6 week, I felt like I still want to do it. Like, it's love. Like, I have this stupid undying hope. Like, I'm like a hopeless romantic. Not with dudes, because I like to, you know, I like the kind of dudes that I like. But when it comes to business, I'm like a hopeless romantic. Yeah. I was like, I still want to do it.
Different show there. You're talking about the one with the dudes. That's a separate dating show.
Yeah, that's Flavor of Love with B. Arthur. with the reincarnated zombie of B. Arthur.
Well, we're talking about entrepreneurship with B. Arthur, who she, you know, she started... Me Time and Pretty Padded Room, which became In Your Corner. We'll talk about that in a minute. But I mean, it's interesting because Shark Tank is an avenue to really cheaply get your name out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think I'm a big fan of bootstrappers. And I think one of the rules that I have with business, and it makes a lot of sense, is keep costs low and try and make revenues as high as you can at the same time. It sounds kind of sensible, but a lot of people miss that one and start investing like crazy.
Mm.
And so if you need a stunning new website, Wix.com is really the way to go. Wix.com empowers business owners to create their own professional websites every day. More than 77 million people use Wix.com to set up their own website. It's very easy to use with hundreds of templates and easy drag and drop tools. You don't need to be a coder to make a beautiful website with Wix.com. And the best part is, it's free, right? That's what I was talking about, bootstrapping, keeping your costs low. You can go to Wix.com and sign up for an entirely free account today. No credit card required. It's easy, and the result is stunning.
What?
Yeah, go to Wix.com. Okay. So we're talking about the sharks here.
I know a lot of people who used Wix, actually. Yeah, yeah I do. Okay. That's sincere.
I think I know one or two as well.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we can talk about this because you're starting a new website yourself.
Yeah.
But let's move away from the sharks, except for one question. And that is that, like, I think you reflected that it's still, despite the fact that they were a little bit aggressive and maybe a little mean-spirited with you, which I guess is what makes good television.
I'm fine now. That was like literally more than 3 years ago.
I don't know B that well, but I can attest to you that she's fine. She
I'm good.
Floated in here, and you know, her spirits are high. You know, I'm just curious. Like, I think you said something, but it still instilled some discipline in you. You know, you thought a little more, I think, about the finances, about mm-hmm. the financial picture, mm-hmm. and got a business mentor. I'm curious, like, what the takeaways from the show were and how that business mentor has helped you.
Yeah, I mean, my big thing with the show was I felt like I still had something. I had the core, you know, like I felt like I had product market fit. We didn't have a ton of traction, but I figured a lot out without having that business language. You know, I got my master's in psych, not in business. So I was just kind of like, you know what, I still feel like I have the core here. And you do have to, I learned that there's a way that you talk to customers and there's a way you talk to investors, you know, and I really hadn't put that together. And another thing that changed was, you know, I started as a solo founder in like every business I've done. I didn't even know what the idea of a co-founder was. And what I learned from that is that I can continue to try and keep doing everything myself, but I won't be able to do it well and I won't be able to do it quickly, and then my company will die. So I, you know, at the beginning you want to keep everything yourself. You don't trust anybody else. And, you know, I just cared so much, so I was working about it all the time, but it's a waste of time. You know, something that'll take you 6 months to figure out will take the right expert like 6 months. So I got mentors. I started looking for CTOs, all of those things. And I just really got deep into the spread. And I was just like, okay, how do I make this a business? I know there's something here, but how do I make this make money so I can work on it full time? And that's when I got off of my got out of bed, and I just started talking to more people. What I do is talk to people first and foremost, and so that's when it started going. Yeah, and that's when I started finding out about accelerators, and that's when we did our thing. And shout out to Shark Tank. They have, at the time, I think They had like 3 million weekly viewers. Now it's like way more than that. We made more in the first month after we aired. I taped in, I want to say November or September, and we aired in February. And in that first week, we made more that week than we had the entire first year.
That's
so
great.
Yeah, it was great.
All's well that ends well.
Exactly.
So you were initially pretty padded room.
Yeah.
And now you're in your corner, and we're going to talk about the latest iteration soon.
Yeah.
But tell me about the decision to move from pretty padded, say that 10 times quickly, pretty padded room to in your corner. Why did you really, like, when and why did you realize it was time for a change?
You know, I almost in some ways wish I hadn't, because pretty padded room for a long time, I didn't realize, as a therapist, when you come from the domain and, you know, when you're in the field, I know, you know that the stigma exists, you know. So for me, I thought it was really fun and playful. And also, I was very specifically targeting millennial women, like 25 to 35. I wanted something that was built for me. With me time, I was trying to build something for moms and really anticipating what they wanted, like in theory. But this time, I was like, no, I'm going to go with what I know. I'm going to design something that I would actually use. So I made it purple. It was super bougie. It was like, you know, all-female team. You know, it was like just for me. And so I went after that market very specifically. And women my age got it, you know. Like, obviously, people were so offended by that name. People were like, are you really implying that I'm crazy? Dudes, especially, women got it. You know, like, women were like, oh, yeah, I felt like that. You know, like, am I wrong? Is my boyfriend wrong? Is my mom tripping? You know, like, women have felt like, am I crazy?
I just thought it was cheeky. I thought it was fine.
It's clearly a joke. Like, yeah. If you sign up, nobody's going to come to your house. And so I just, there's a lot of humorless people out there. And you know what I realized? And I hate to say this because I'm in a room with men. The people who had the biggest issues were dudes. They're like, how dare you? I'm offended. It's like, all right, bro, take that over there. They said women are emotional, but calm down.
So you just felt like eventually just the name was holding
you back.
Well,
we started to get more traction and press. And on the one hand, it got us press because, you know, people loved that conversation. People loved the Japan story. And people, you know, got to talk about that feeling of, yeah, I felt like that before. I felt like I was crazy. But when I started to try to get serious with when I did build my team and I did start going at investors, I'd have to spend the first 10 minutes, 10, 15 minutes explaining why we got to the name and why I felt strongly about the brand. And, you know, investors are really only paying attention for the first 10, 15 minutes. So I'm like, it's slowing me down. Then we actually got into Y Combinator. And God bless YC. They actually liked the name. They didn't think that it was, like, holding me back. And they really got that we were going after a very specific market segment. However, while I was in YC, I was, like, one of, like, 8 women out of, like, 200 dudes, like, in the entire batch. And because I'm a therapist, this happens a lot to therapists, and I'm sure any kind of, like, doctor as well. People always like, hey, can I talk to you? You know, and it's a very stressful time. And so all the founders were like, yeah, so my girlfriend doesn't want to do long distance, or, oh, you know, me and my co-founder are beefing, you know, and I was just kind of like, you know what I do, right? Like, why won't you use my site? And they were like, I wanted to, actually, but it's so purple. And I was like, you know, if anybody's going to get therapy on the low, it's going to be dudes, you know? So I was just like, we've gone far with this brand. Why am I holding it back? You know, I want to, like, expand it and do more partnership and enterprise partnership opportunities. So I was just kind of like, okay, it's time. And also one of my investors was like, listen, you have to change the name. And so we came up, we actually had a brainstorming session in this beautiful house in San Francisco. And we came up with the name In Your Corner. And it just felt really, I felt it was time. I started when I was 27. It had been 3 years at that point. I felt like Pretty Padded Room was more punk and, you know, like, rebellious and, you know, In Your Corner is more bougie. So I felt like it was time.
And you mentioned Y Combinator, and you were the
shout out to
first first African-American woman CEO to join Y Combinator.
That's right.
So clearly with the pride you said it with,
no.
Is that a meaningful distinction to you? I think the answer might be yes.
You know what's really funny? I thought of myself as an entrepreneur, a business owner. I did not think of myself as a startup founder. I thought that was something that they did way out there, and, you know, just all of that seemed way outside of what I was doing. But my service was facilitated through tech. So I hadn't even heard of Y Combinator. Another hustle. This is another thing. People think you have to go straight to getting investors. I did every business plan competition in the world. That's how I paid my bills. That's how I kept things going. And I did one in San Francisco with Women 2.0 and Jessica Livingston, who's the original co-founder of YC, was one of my judging panels. She was like, listen, we're having a conference. She was like, you've made real money. She's like, and especially in the Valley, like, it's more user first as opposed to revenue first out here.
Right.
You like see more revenue potential. She was like, I mean, you could have a real business. She was like, even if you like 2X, 3X this, like, and I had never thought about selling it. I literally worked backwards. When I first starting it, you know, I was making $38,000. I was like, wow, if I got 100 clients and took a 20% cut, I could be making $40,000. You know, I really never thought about selling it for millions. And she was like, I really want you to think about building the kind of infrastructure because this could be like a real thing. And so I hadn't even heard of YC. I went out for the interview. Everything felt out of my league. I didn't know, like I said, from Shark Tank, I didn't know any of those terms. I didn't know any of the processes, getting a board, none of that. But I went, and I'm super glad I did. And I just think it's more about, you know, now that the conversation about diversity in tech and women in tech is happening, yes, of course, there's unconscious bias happening when it comes to hiring and investing and things like that. But there's also just a lack of education and access and awareness, you know, from the actual founders. I wish I had known about engineering growing up. I wish they taught that. I wish I had known about YC, just because, you know, especially as an immigrant, your parents know doctor and lawyer. You know, they don't know say that you can be a CEO and you can like run a tech platform. None of that. So YC was really good for me. It was a little bit different because, you know, I'm a woman. I'm emotional. I'm black. I'm from New York. I'm a therapist. And out there, you know, nerds run things. You know, they don't look at you when they talk to you. I got big boobs. They were always uncomfortable. You know, so it was a little bit weird. But I accommodate. You have to be flexible. You have to adapt, you know, with your face. It's true.
I'm hearing you.
It's true. And it really got me out of the weeds. You know, I was, like I said, solo founder, just trying to do everything myself. And it got me to think about what it would take to get to that kind of scale. So I'm really grateful. I'm really proud. Anybody who feels like they won't fit in or they can't do it, I love to talk to. That's why I like being the black girl in the room. Yeah, just to let people know you could do it.
I think with the, so I mean, In Your Corner is kind of a, you know, it's kind of a marketplace for coaching.
That's exactly right.
And so now you have, what, about 25 coaches on the site?
Yeah, we have 25, and then I think we have 18 who are actively taking clients.
Okay.
But that's all about to change.
Right. I want to tell you about Kevin Gowan Sr., who, realizing that accounts receivable financing was a growing industry, saw that it was just missing a few key components. Kevin founded AmeriFactors Financial Group, LLC, in 1990, with a focus on professionalism, expert customer service, and a drive to take the success of your business personally. They've been in business for 20 years and have funded over $5 billion, that's right, $1 billion, two businesses. With AmeriFactors, you can stop waiting 30, 60, or 90 days to get paid on invoices. You can turn your invoices into immediate working capital through factoring. Factoring isn't a loan, and there's nothing to pay back. You can use the funds to make payroll, hire new staff, buy equipment, or go after new customers. AmeriFactors may be a financial service provider, but there's so much more than that. They're your business partner. Go to www.amerifactors.com or call 1-800-844-FUND. That's 1-800-844-FUND. The $600 application fee will be waived if you mention the Smart People Should Build Things podcast when you call.
This is Smart People Should Build Things, the Venture for America podcast.
But it's interesting, like, because those marketplaces are, it's like a chicken and egg problem, where if you have a ton of demand, you don't have enough coaches, that's a problem. If you have too many coaches, maybe they're idle and they want work.
Exactly.
How do you manage that chicken and egg problem?
Yeah. So with the marketplace, like, first of all, I met one of the most amazing mentors and advisors. And the marketplace guy in the Valley is a guy called Simon Rothman, who is very lovely, very sweet, very sincere, and brilliant. Literally every time I have to, like, sit still after I meet with him. He's just so smart. And he reached out to me. He asked one of the YC partners, actually, to get in touch with me. And he had invested in a competitor, so he couldn't invest. And at the time, I think he was at Greylock or Greycroft, I forget. But he was just like, we were just talking, and he's like, your instincts are spot on. He was just like, I really wish you had the kind of team around you that could help you go, because your instincts are spot on. Because I started by myself, and because I was doing the help desk, I was doing the hiring, you know, I was doing all the accounting, I really start to see the flow. And I really recommend, before you start to build your team, do every single position in your company so you know what you're looking for, you know what you need to accelerate, you know what your weaknesses are, and you know what you need to delegate, and you'll be able to manage more effectively, so people aren't just figuring it out by themselves. And so I knew that it wasn't a good look to have like 20 therapists and they're all like, I need more clients. And you know, I like to keep it really lean and mean, because the therapists don't pay me. The user pays me. So I wanted to focus on aggregating user demand. And then, you know, then I hire only as needed. And also just, I didn't need more people asking me for things when I'm trying to build the user side of the marketplace. So that's really all I did. I didn't, like, you know, even when we were doing quite small, like 100,000 a year, like, that's still a lot of work if it's just you, you know? So so that's what I focused on. With something like therapy, you know, I feel like, you know, with Uber or Handy, you know, that's a commodity marketplace. It could be literally anybody. But with something like therapy, it's a specialty marketplace. So it takes more consumer education. It's probably 4 to 5 touches versus like the first one, like, oh, I need a cab, oh, I need cake, you know? So you really have to understand the nuances of the user behavior and like the purchase behavior, retention and things like that. So that's what I mostly focused on and just honed in on. And yeah, it doesn't have a natural network effect either. Nobody's like bragging, like, oh, my therapist said my marriage is failing. You know, like nobody's, you know, shouting it from the rooftop. So you have to get really clever and creative with marketing.
Right. That is interesting. I think I have a similar business. Mm. One of our brands is getting people into MBA programs, and it's tough because you don't have visibility into where the next client is coming from at any time when you have this type of business.
And so especially with therapists, you can't, because of like privacy and HIPAA and stuff like that, you don't have analytics, like the really kind of like deep dive mixed panel analytics beyond like where they live and how old they are, maybe, because you can't release it, you know, so everything is like super encrypted on my side. So there's a lot of guesswork, there's a lot of trial and error, and you get really close to, you know, the customers and just see if people tell you the truth.
So let's talk about the transition, then we can come back to a little bit more on how the platform works. I think you probably couldn't go further away from starting with Pretty Padded Room.
True.
You know, I think you described it as bougie and for women, or perceived that way, towards where you're going. So we were talking before the show.
Tell us
where you're going now.
So I'm going from bougie bitches to hardcore G's. I have been wanting to do this forever. And so that's another thing that happens when you don't have a big team and a lot of funding. You can't do as many things in parallel. But like I mentioned, when I was in Y Combinator, a lot of guys were like, hey, could I talk to you? And, you know, just like low-key needed support. And I feel like it's a lot harder for men to ask for help or admit that they're struggling with something than it is for women who are already in the process of calling their mom regularly or their dad or telling their girlfriends. And so my goal with this is always, I love therapy so much. I love to make people feel better and live happier, better sisters. I just feel like, I don't know why we struggle alone. So I've always wanted to change the idea of what therapy is and whom it's for. And so I was like, you know, what if we went to the top of the mountain? What if we got the most hardcore, toughest dudes to just be like, yeah, I feel better now that I've talked to somebody about it. And look, my life is better now too, and it's not still weighing on me, and I'm not still stuck in that awful place that literally everyone has been in. You know, there's no shame in being like, yeah, people have literally been like, well, investors, I hate that. They're always like, so who would use this? It's like, you have never been in a time in your life when you could have used like an objective perspective. You know, come on. So I really, and especially since we had a lot of active duty military on the site, a lot of our highest grossing therapists are military wives because they move a lot and aren't able to build up their private practice in person as quickly. And so I just became really interested in that population. There's a very strong network effect there because like it's just a culture and they understand each other and like if somebody says do it, you do it. And then also I just thought about their families. You know, it's one thing for the guy to go away and, you know, be fighting, and it's another thing for their families at home. Sometimes they don't see their partners for 18 months or more, and some of them don't know their kids when they come back. And I just thought about, you know, because the startup journey is a very long, very lonely one, and sometimes I feel like, God, how long is this gonna last? And I always felt like, damn, like what would it be like for them? You're just fighting, you can't question anything. Sometimes they literally intentionally mess with your mind just so you can keep people safe. Like, how must they feel? And I just feel like people come, you know, I just became really like soft-hearted about it. And so I actually worked with my team, especially the ones who were military wives, and I wanted to do something very specific for them. With something like therapy, it's very important that you go narrow and go deep, and that's why we did Pretty Padded Room. So I was like, let's just go to the opposite, like, from bougie bitches to warrior. So we are starting Inside the Wire, and that's what we're pivoting to at present, which is a military term that means like go deep and reevaluate and come back out swinging. And you can't call it therapy, so our tagline is Wisdom for Warriors. And we want to provide support and guidance and just companionship for people when they're abroad. And it'll be mobile based. It'll be just almost the same thing as what we're doing now, but it'll be one flat rate. And we're looking into doing government grants because that's actually a really big thing. Just because distance counseling, so many people are stationed in rural areas and they can't keep up with appointments. So it just makes sense. And I think there's a lot of potential there. I'd also love to get into like prisons and, you know, like refugee. Just, I really like the, you know, we're really, really lucky that we can like have access to our family. But even what I've learned with the site is like, you know, we're in 23 countries. There's places where studying psychology isn't even a thing. So like getting a therapist isn't even an option for you to do. So I love to be a resource in places that it's not possible. I don't want, if anybody can feel less alone or less pain because of me, then I'm going to heaven. So all that drinking won't matter.
So when does Inside the Wire launch?
Well, we shall see. We're actually transitioning out. I've always wanted to try and do both. That's not happening. There's a lot of competitors popping up. When I first started 5 years ago, we were the very first people in the space, one of the very first people. There were a lot of dead bodies in the space. And now that people have gotten more used to the idea, especially now that mobile is happening, and people are just so connected to their machines, it makes sense. So I'm kind of like, you know what, let them own it. And I'm just going to go back to what I used to do, which is just really knowing and supporting a particular population. So we're working on that. We're just going to start building in Q2. And, oh, I'm sorry. I just got yelled at. And so silently yelled at. Do you have kids?
I have one and one on the way any minute.
Oh my, what are we doing here?
Any minute. I gotta, you know, check. That's why I'm occasionally checking my phone, which I turn my phone off.
I told
a friend of mine he has to deliver my child if it happens during the podcast. So
B. Arthur's gonna be here, damn it. No, I only asked because you had a very stern, like I immediately understood that I should stop fiddling with my wife.
Non-visual, I mean, non-verbal
communication. I won't do it. I'll be good.
No, you can do whatever you want. I was just thinking a little bit of an echo. But go ahead. I would okay. Continue.
So we're doing Inside the Wire. We're hoping for a beta launch. But getting government contracts takes a very long time. But there's still a lot of initiatives that we can do anyway. I already know how like the money part works. We can build a much cleaner, much faster product. I'm excited. Yeah.
So why not have two or three different brands that are just skinned and targeted at different populations? Why do you have to shut down in your corner?
I would have liked to skin it and just keep redoing it for different populations. For example, I'd really also love to do one for couples who are just going through stuff, just for marriage and family therapists. But we're a really small team. I've gone from one person to three person to two people to three people back to one person again. Funding sucks right now. And also, I just have mentioned it to a few people, and I think investors are greedy. They want a clean cap table, you know. Like it's, and also, since it's we'll be focusing more on enterprise, it does need to be a little bit of a different structure if we're going to involve government money. So,
and I know you had a small angel round for In Your Corner, right?
Yeah. So for In Your Corner, we raised a total of $400,000.
Okay.
And so through YC, and then I did a little round after YC.
And so how do you talk to your investors about how you're shutting down In Your Corner?
Oh, so I probably keep my investors too updated. I'm telling them that it's a pivot, and it is. You know, I'm going to be using most of the same therapists, but I do need time to just like focus and build it. You know, like I've had this idea since 2014, since I was in YC, and I haven't been able to do it. We also wanted to do an enterprise version called Safe Space. It's just I don't have a large enough team, or we didn't have enough money to do that many things at the same time. And I think it's time. I think it's a really good time with the political climate and everything. So, and I was kind of ready for, you know, 5 years. It starts to feel like a regular job. And I think most founders are innovators. And instead, I got really distracted with raising and hiring and being a product person and managing. And I miss creating. I miss therapy. I miss like the story. So it feels like a new thing. I had a second win.
So, you know, the intensity of starting again, it's like it's so much. And I've got, again, I'm going back to a quote from you.
Oh, man.
You told Elle Magazine, come you told, on. Or maybe Elle Online, I don't know. One of the two, I don't, I'm not, a, I'm going to confess, I'm not, I don't have a subscription to Elle.
You get it, you're straight.
I've lost a couple of friendships just from being a shitty friend. I couldn't enjoy New York as much because I was either broke or busy or in a bad mood, or I'd worry I'd be boring, which doesn't seem like that's possible because I could only think about work. And yeah, there were definitely times when I was like, why am I doing this?
Yep.
I'm working all the time and I'm never going to stop. So how does, you're giving the first like,
wow, I told them the whole truth. No, I'm just like, ooh.
Maybe I shouldn't be doing this a third time. So where do you find the well of energy? I mean, do you still feel like that's true? I mean, you do have a lot of energy, obviously, but do you feel like that's still true? Is there anything daunting about the third go round of this?
Yes. Yes. Yes, because yes, absolutely. I would have liked to try and do both at the same time, but the truth is I was really burned out. Our rebrand did not go well. It was literally like Murphy's Law last year. I mean, like I stopped paying myself back in February. It was like a joke. Like I almost got like superstitious. I was like, maybe I should just stop trying things. Like, you know, like people were, it was really, really bad. And so I've been burnt out since like we ran out of money in May and it was just back to revenue. It was the first time we had money. It was this new brand and it was just a huge disappointment. It was like, wow, we finally have funding. I finally have a team. And, you know, just so many, my technical team was just garbage. It was hot garbage. And they were very expensive and they took all our money and energy. And so I've been burned out since 2015. And it just was kind of not feeling, I felt more like the janitor instead of the CEO. I was apologizing for the bugs. I was doing workarounds with the clients. I was getting yelled at first and paid last. One of my therapists made $100,000 last year. I made $26,000. You know, that's the real, you know, like I know plenty of entrepreneurs who, you know, they like to show Silicon Valley and people balling out, but I know plenty of entrepreneurs who make $45,000 for several years.
Yeah, absolutely.
Several years, and you expense a lot, well, you can't, but it sucks. Like, it's one thing to be in constant stress and just constantly focus on your business, but having the undercurrent of, like, debt and, like, you know, it's really stressful. And so when we were trying to raise it and we couldn't, like, a seed extension, I felt like we were kind of close enough to do an A, so, like, what our numbers were, but it was more looking like a seed. Anyways, I all the stuff that I hate like, I hate dealing with developers who are fucking princesses. Forgive me, this is a family show, right? And I hate dealing with investors and just like, oh, well, let's wait, and playing that game. I hate it. Like, I like building. I like moving. I like, you know, the relationships part. And I hate that stuff. And I was doing all the stuff. It just wasn't fun anymore. And so, yeah, that quote seems super relevant today. And at the beginning of the year, I was like, you know, we could get 10X, but I know what that feels like. So I, to your point, yeah, I definitely had, you know, maybe I should just get a job. Maybe someone will pay me $200,000. I could go back to therapy. You know, I still take clients now, and I love that, and, you know, and have a much easier life. But it's just like your wife. You know, I just want to meet it. I've wanted it for a long time. I just want to see if it'll work.
Right. I don't know if we talked about it before the show. My wife was a social worker for quite a long time.
Yeah.
So I know this very well, Samantha.
Shout out to Samantha. We're thinking of you, girl. Can't wait to see the baby.
True. We cannot. Any day now. So,
wow.
I'm curious also, as someone who is working in, you know, in the field of mental health, like, mm-hmm. how, you know, you're talking about how, you know, you're letting friendships go and things occasionally go to kilter. Ugh. How do you keep your balance personally, you know, during these tough times?
I am definitely a do as I say, not as I do. I mean, I will see, I actually tend to have a lot of startup clients because I'm in the startup space and I understand. And I've seen driven people break in all sorts of ways. And the people that are attracted to this lifestyle are very intense people who feel things very deeply. So I can see it and I know why they're reacting that way. And so the advice I give them is not advice they take myself. You know, you should work out every day, even if you don't have time, because you're going to spend that time literally crying in a corner anyway. So you might as well look sexy if you're going to be mad all the time, you know? And so, like, I like to eat, you know, I like to, you know, hang out with my boo too much. You know, I just have really distractive, numbing coping mechanisms. And it was just getting, yeah, I did lose some friendships. Like, two of my closest friends I'm not friends with anymore just because I was always irritable. And, you know, I like to, you know, like, I'm really silly, you know. So, like, I wasn't that anymore and I was really focused. And even my sister didn't like, I got to that place a couple of times. And you know, you do need to add things to your life. You can't pour from an empty cup. So I learned that lesson the hard way. And so now I take my friends very seriously. Before, I would flake all the time. They used to call it plan B because we'd make a plan and I'd go to sleep or I'd say, no, I have to work. They would always make other plans because I'd always flake. So now I take my friendships very seriously. Relationships are very important to me. I make a lot of connections and introductions. So, yeah.
Let's talk about the personal rebranding here. You know, you're in the process of I think, pitching a few, not one, but two shows.
Two shows.
So tell me about that as well.
Well, one is actually online. Y'all can check it out on vproud.tv. My producer is Karen Kahn, the YouTube for Women. And You're Not Crazy is a project I'm really proud of and really excited to see how far it goes. Because I think when I talk about therapy, people always ask me about mental health and mental illness. And I actually don't think of it that way. I actually don't like the term mental health. I prefer to say emotional health. Because I think when people think therapy, they think problems. But like, everybody has stuff, right? You know, so if you just frame it like, well, remember that time you didn't know what to do about your job? Remember that time you hated your boss and you felt stuck? Like, that's what a therapist can help you do. You know what I mean? And like, remember when everybody was just like, yeah, dump your girlfriend, but you weren't ready? I feel like just normalize bad things. I think the stigma isn't with mental health. Literally, this is what therapy is. Two people in a room talking. One of them just is a practitioner, right? But I think this real stigma is we're talking about bad things. You know, I really think that we need to normalize. I think if somebody yells, they're like, oh, you're bipolar. You know, if somebody's like sad because their mom died, oh, this grief, you're depressed. You know, like, that's a totally normal response. People are just like, especially now with mindfulness and stuff, well, I guess I'll just be grateful. Grateful for what? Like, what do you mean? Like, what do you mean? Like, that's a natural reaction. If you go near fire, you're going to feel bad. And I really want to normalize the experience of bad feelings. I really believe that if people were better at talking to other people about things that are wrong, my industry wouldn't exist, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I love this new project, which is called You're Not Crazy, because I've literally had people just go on and on about these things. I'm like, yep, that sounds normal to me. It would be weird if you didn't feel that. And I feel like sometimes people are almost disappointed, like,
right.
Oh, I thought, you know, it was pathological. No, you are not a psychopath. You just are really annoyed with your boyfriend, you know? I get it. So You're Not Crazy is the show, and we have comedians. Comedians are really fantastic about observing human behavior and why we do the things we do. And we just talk about mental health topics like anxiety, imposter syndrome, dating, things like that. And I'm the resident therapist, and we kind of process it. And the ultimate lesson is, yeah, that's cool. You're not therapy. You're not crazy.
And that's one of the two shows. But the other show.
So the other show, I can't talk too much about.
We can't talk. Okay.
Jeremy's a snitch. Yeah, no,
well,
but
we'll have to ask your mom about it when she comes on the show.
She'll probably already wrote a Medium post about it. But yeah, no. So we're really excited about that.
We'll keep it.
Well, I can tell you a little.
Okay, the little. Give us a teaser.
So. There, you know, it's very hot right now to talk about women in tech and diversity in tech. And I have been so supportive. I would not be where I was without a lot of my female friends here in New York. Just, you know, after Shark Tank, people just like out of the blue would reach out to me and be like, hey, let's have lunch. When I was in Y Combinator, Danielle Morrill of Mattermark, Gina Bianchini, formerly of Andreessen and now doing Mighty Bell, would just reach out to me, invite me over to their house and just like talk to me and just help me. And it was just so generous. Women talk, they talk about women being catty or competitive. Not over here. All the women I know are like super, very impressive women who are very generous and supportive. And so we kind of want to show that. I mean, like, you know, Catherine from the Muse, you know, the McKinsey women who have started all these companies, all the people in Newsweek, tech and media. It's a very tight community here in New York. In San Francisco, they're not as tight. But out here, you know, we do things right. So, yeah, we'll be just showing real women doing real work and what it takes to shine and look good while doing it.
Sounds great. I look forward to seeing it.
Can't wait. Thank you.
And I guess before we wrap, why don't you give us all the websites and Twitter feeds and, I don't know, Instagrams and other things that people give so that people can learn more about you.
Thank you so much. So things are changing. So unfortunately, after 5 years of Pretty Patterman in Your Corner, we are doing a pause and going to focus on Inside the Wire for our troops. So In Your Corner Online, we'll be redirecting. We have partnerships with some of our competitors, Talkspace and Doctor On Demand in San Francisco. And then we also, my personal website is barthurtherapy.com. I am taking a select few clients, probably not more than two though, but you can reach out to me there. I'm happy to support you and provide references to our other excellent therapists who I can vouch for. Inside the Wire will be insidethewire.co and VBrow TV and YouTube. You can find You're Not Crazy. So lots more to come.
Awesome. Well, I mean, thanks so much. You've been super, aside from high energy, very candid.
You look so tired.
I am, you know what? I've been up since 4.
I was going to say, you're ready for that baby too.
I need like a 10th coffee of the day. But you've been super candid. And I think, you know, look, the reason why we have the show is to try and, you know, peel back the veneer from entrepreneurship. And it looks so easy from the outside. And, you know, you've spoken particularly candidly about how hard it is. So we really appreciate that. You win big points on the podcast.
Thank you.
So thanks so much. And we'll catch up with you in the future as Inside the Wire takes off.
I'm excited.
And seriously, no joke, look for Bea Arthur's mother on the show as soon as her mother is next in New York. I'm having her on the show. I want to have so many different types of entrepreneurs.
Let's call her right now.
She's
no joke. Yeah, she's big time.
it sounds amazing. That would be unlike you're unlike anything we found on the show, and she would be as well.
Hi, mommy. Look out for Mary Arthur after Doris.
Next guest.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks, y'all.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.